Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization is celebrating its 75th anniversary in Washington this week. For many in the West, NATO is deemed to be the most successful military alliance in history. For others beyond the West, NATO is the most serious security threat to humanity today. Crosstalking NATO, I'm joined by my guest, Aaron Good, in Philadelphia. He is a political scientist, historian, as well as author of American Exception, Empire and the Deep State. In San Francisco, we have KJ No. He is a political analyst and journalist. And in Lisbon, we cross to Alexander Guerrero. He is an international legal analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump any time you want, and I always appreciate it. Aaron, let me go to you first in Philadelphia. We hear over and over again, NATO is the most successful military alliance in history. It's almost like hitting F1 on your computer. But, you know, as they're celebrating their 75th anniversary in Washington, what achievements do they have under their belt other than surviving as an alliance? That's the only quote-unquote achievement I can think of. Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, NATO served to keep alive Western imperialism and to rebrand it as a, you know, consolidated under the U.S. banner, as really all of the colonial powers of the world united basically the core of capitalism and imperialism for the preceding centuries. And they were able to rebrand it as a defense of freedom, this very powerful force that had a lot of invested capital all around the world. The U.S. policed that, and NATO was the tip of the spear there, in a sense, especially as it began to expand into these quote-unquote peacekeeping missions and so on in the wake of the Cold War, of the aftermath of the Cold War. And this led to it becoming something kind of different, sort of a enforcer for for global capitalism, for the U.S. empire, Western imperialism. But going back to the Cold War, I mean, it's a successful regime in that it did stay in power for so long, but it's also existed as a kind of dictatorship of Europe in certain ways. I mean, the Gladio networks were called NATO's secret armies by some people, and they were there as a kind of dictatorship in the wings for any Western European leader that got out of line.
Yep.
They could stage false flag terror attacks. So it put the lie to democracy, because you can't really have a democracy when the state maintains a secret veto over the very lives of your heads of state and can also engage in acts of false flag terrorism to move the population politically wherever they want them. So this is really a dark force in global politics that I don't think will be fully recognized by large parts of the public until the aftermath, as with so many things that we see in the last decades, especially the U.S. empire. There's such denial about what is at the top of it, at the core of it, that I don't think we can deal with it until that power is decisively defeated. Perhaps when NATO is dissolved, we'll start talking about these things.
Well, you know, KJ, it's really interesting vis-a-vis the Ukraine conflict. NATO has been able to devour, as it were, the European Union. I mean, it's NATO that dictates the security ideas of the entire Union. The independent states do not. So that is another a notch in NATO's belt. One of the interesting things is they always talk about themselves as a defensive alliance. I'm calling this program Offensive Alliance. I wonder what people in Serbia think about the term defensive alliance, or Libya and the failed mission in Afghanistan. I mean, and also what they're doing in Ukraine. I mean, they continue to say that they're not a party to the conflict, which is just laughable. Go ahead, KJ.
Yes, I mean, it's been the murderous arm of U.S. imperialism. And it's, as you said earlier, its greatest success has been its branding or its mystification of what it's really doing. It's not defensive. It's never fought a defensive war in its lifetime. It claims to be a collection of democracies, but no, it's never been democratic from the beginning. It was allied with fascist states like Portugal and Italy. It was integral in ensuring the success of fascism around Europe. And it even had Hitler's one-time chief of staff, Adolf Heusinger. He went from the chief of the Nazi military command to the chief of the NATO military command. And it, you know, purports to uphold human rights and rule of law, but actually it destroys human rights. It destroys human lives. It destroys hope. And I think the way that the countries around the world have largely seen through it, it sees it for what it is, an aggressive arm of U.S. imperialism, the enforcer, the goons of U.S. capitalism.
Well, it's Alexander, you know, they call themselves a defensive alliance. But if you look at the security architecture of Europe, NATO is an instrument in which European security is decided not only without Russia, but against Russia. And that's why we have the situation we have in Ukraine. Go ahead, in Lisbon.
Right. Here we have a saying here in Europe where we say the best defense is the attack. And basically, this is the topic that inspires and that the motto that leads NATO on its actions towards any other countries. We must not forget that NATO itself, it was created in late 1940s, especially to tackle and to block the communism as well as the influence of Soviet Union all over Europe. So it started to have an inspiration to fight Russia. What today is Russia? After the topple or after the fall of the Berlin Wall, things changed drastically because they had in Kremlin back then a president that was totally in favor of the Western influence. But suddenly, when the Russians decided to have their own identity, to make their own way by themselves, then again Russia rise as being understood here in the West as being an enemy. And as long as we have this kind of understanding to look at Russia as an enemy and not as an ally, we will keep only feeding social unrest, civil unrest, interventionism, like actually that's everything that marks and that's the main brand of NATO all over the world. So what we have now in Ukraine, this is not a surprise. If we take a look about how the United States worked so hard along with the European Union to topple a democratically elected president and to train, to influence the political situation in Ukraine and to come to what we are witnessing now, under NATO's eyes, this is understood as being a challenge of life or death. We as NATO, or we as West, we have to defeat the independent Russia as well as multipolarism. This is how things are understood. And in the end, this is how NATO is working, is by spreading more and more, not only fake news, but also to share and to provide a lot of weaponry to Ukraine, because their dream is not to save Ukraine, is not to have an independent Ukraine. Their goal, their main goal, is only to target Russia. And after Russia, it will also come China, the two major powers in the world who are independently and who work independently from Western influence.
Well, you know, Aaron, we heard from Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, early on in this conflict, or this part of the conflict, I should say, because it started in 2014, not in 2022, is that the goal is to weaken Russia. And, of course, not only to weaken Russia, but to break it up. We have there are officials in the European Union now that say that openly. Go ahead, Aaron.
Right. That's clearly what the whole Maidan coup was about. And it's more and more obvious that this is the case. And it's the whole episode highlights the real crisis at the top of the U.S. regime, because it should have been easy to game out that the Ukrainians were not going to be able to defeat Russia, that Russia viewed this as an extremely important existential even battle for themselves, and that they would not be able to defeat Russia in Ukraine without provoking a response that could likely lead to nuclear war. And Russia has been very methodical about treating the Ukrainian military, that is essentially a NATO military, week after week after week. And when we were talking before about how people predicted that this conflict would end pretty quickly, and it absolutely should have ended very quickly. It was about to end in April.
That's right. That's right.
With negotiations. And it's a truism in international relations and political science that you can't achieve anything at the negotiating table that you cannot achieve on the battlefield. But this wasn't really true for Ukraine. Ukraine could actually walk away with a much better deal than it ever could achieve on the battlefield, as we are seeing now, and was always obvious. And the war itself had the effect of imposing upon Russia the imperative that they had to engage in import substitute industrialization because of all the sanctions and everything else. But the U.S. actually, and the West, the liberal West of the early Cold War, used to actually advocate this for countries that had balance of payments problems and so on, as a way to shore up their economic systems. And this is how the U.S. became an economic power, was through import substitute industrialization, taxing tariffs and taxing imports and building infrastructure. That was how the U.S. became an economic power.
That's right.
So we basically forced Russia to do things that were very beneficial for Russia economically and industrially, and we hastened the end of the dollar regime, and we have wasted massive amounts of money, some of which went to actually buy weapons and probably pay soldiers, but a lot of it was just embezzled by Ukrainians who are there taking all of this money and just sacrificing their own countrymen for this doomed effort that has really only made Russia considerably stronger, the U.S. and NATO weaker, and destroyed Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, KJ, the whole effort to turn the ruble into rubble is actually boomerang very, very strongly against the West. I mean, if you live in Russia and you don't follow the news, you wouldn't even know the country is sanctioned. Go ahead, KJ, real quick before we go to the break.
Absolutely. And most countries have not gone along with those sanctions. It's the vast majority of countries, except for the EU and some Western European vassals. Those are the only countries that have gone along with these unilateral illegal sanctions. Most of the world has voted with their feet, and they said that we are not with the United States. We are not with NATO. And so very clearly, as you point out, in Russia, the sanctions are not felt. Russia's economy is doing fine. In fact, it's doing much, much better.
Well, I mean, I'll surprise a lot of viewers. I like the sanctions. I like them. Well, get away from the toxic financial system of the West, because it doesn't have a future. All right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that break, we'll continue our discussion on NATO. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing NATO. Okay, Alexander, I started out this program by asking Aaron what NATO has achieved on its 75th birthday here. But I found, broken promises, to be honest with you. And let's go through four of them real quick, one right after another. Not one inch east, talking about German unification, okay? They lied about that. Ukrainian neutrality, they lied about that. Indivisibility of security, they lied about that. And the whole Minsk process, they've proven themselves to be deceitful liars. So I don't know what they're celebrating, but I think the dishonesty and duplicity of this alliance has to be highlighted. That's why I'm making this program. Alexander.
Yes, basically they are celebrating all those countries that they helped to fuel unrest. They also helped to dismember, and I think about Yugoslavia probably, under NATO's perspective. This is a reason to celebrate, especially for the present Secretary General of the United Nations, who back then was Prime Minister of Portugal, and he supported fully the NATO intervention in Yugoslavia. Now he's appealing and to try to call for peace in Ukraine. But basically what Ukraine has been giving us, what NATO has been giving us all over this time, was only an imperialistic agenda, only a demonstration that they want to gather more and more countries, only under the perspective of avoiding fear, rather than that they will give any kind of defensive perspective. For example, Ukraine, they have the expectations to join NATO soon, which we all know it's highly unlikely to happen.
It will never happen, never.
I don't want to say impossible, but it's highly unlikely, but I believe that they will keep putting pressure on the Secretary General of NATO to accept them. At the same time, I believe that this is no coincidence that early this week, totally out of the blue, we've heard about the incidents on a pediatric hospital in Kiev. And the way it was discussed and debated all over Western media,
yep.
and how this could be used in order to justify more and more weaponry support from NATO to Ukraine. We never heard, we have never heard until now, and not only NATO officials, but also European Union officials, speaking about peace, about truce, never heard of, about that. We only hear the same kind of motto, which is destroy and defeat Russia. We have to attack Russia, regardless of what the effects they will produce on Ukraine. And I have to ask, what kind of Ukraine will we have in the next 1 to 2 years? Will there even be Ukraine? What can, is this the project of NATO? Is this an example?
Well,
of
you know, Alexander, I don't think the NATO under the leadership of the United States gives a hoot about what happens to Ukraine personally, okay? I mean, I suppose the Zelensky regime, as illegitimate as it is right now, they will always strive for NATO membership as long as they get paid, okay? I don't know, do these people send their kids to the front? I tend to doubt it. You know, Aaron, there's I mentioned my third broken promise lie here, and I don't want to sound really nerdy, but, you know, the indivisibility of security, this was what made European security work. You cannot enhance your security at the expense of another country. Everybody agreed to that. Everybody agreed. It was called the Helsinki process, okay? And now NATO acts as if that doesn't exist. Well, Russia does. Aaron.
Right, and we're seeing now with the position that Israel finds itself in that it really is a huge security issue to have hostile military powers right on your doorstep. Israel has been in this position where it should have tried to make peace with the people in the region, but it was so hell-bent on expropriating what the Palestinians had left that they've antagonized all of their neighbors, and they find themselves surrounded by people who have missiles that can be aimed at them, and there's really no defense against that. Ukraine, armed with hypersonic missiles, which the U.S. will one day be able to produce, you know, more efficiently in the near future, that would have been a disaster for Russia. They would have been minutes away from the nuclear range of NATO. Moscow would have been. So it really was a tremendous threat and a legitimate threat. This wasn't an imperialistic land grab by Vladimir Putin. The way that it's depicted in the West, Russia has lots of land and lots of resources. It really was motivated by a fear of security that is existential, because it's the same logic that the U.S. applied to Cuba in the Cuban Missile Crisis. And you can't really stop ballistic missiles that are very close to you, as Israel is finding out. You can just overwhelm all missile defense systems. And that's why this was deemed as such a huge threat, in part, and the fact that it would have taken away their access to a warm water port, which is essential for Russia, and which I think is part of the motivation for it. I think Russia's backing of Syria made the neocons that run U.S. foreign policy for the last 30 years, it made them go kind of insane.
Yep.
Because they really, I think that they are people who are, a large part of them are dedicated first and foremost to the idea of greater Israel, and Syria stands in the way of the final solution for the Palestinians. And since Russia helped Syria, well, then Russia had to be destroyed. I think that might be the thing that best explains why they were not so greedy, because that's what we expect from Western imperialism, but greedy and single-minded in a stupid way to confront Russia in a stupid, foolish, and self-destructive way.
They know very little about history, because let's just go back to the Cold War. Major nuclear powers don't go toe-to-toe. It's not a good idea. You know why? Because one might lose, or both might lose. Go back to the 19th century. Great powers tried to stay away from fighting each other because you could lose, okay? Look what happened in 1918. Major powers fighting each other. One empire after another collapse. It's not a good idea to do it. And now we have nuclear weapons, okay? That's what makes these people fools and very, very dangerous. KJ, let me go to you. I mean, I promised myself I wouldn't make a program about Biden's dementia, but Biden's dementia is interfering with our program. Okay, we all know about the disastrous debate. Check, that's done. But then with the ABC News interview with Stephanopoulos, Biden was talking about his achievements. I expanded NATO. Do Americans really give a hoot about expansion of NATO? I mean, considering half the country is poor, the debt that is there, so many people fear for their livelihood here, and you have this man saying, but I expanded NATO. I mean, these people are really out of touch.
No, it's absurd. I mean, clearly, Biden is no longer capable of, you know, exercising even minimal cognitive function. I think just the other day he said that he was the first black president.
Vice president, yeah.
Yes, vice president. So I think that, you know, in the United States, all you have to do is look around you. People are starving, they're homeless, they're hysterical, they're naked, they're suffering. You know, 50% of the U.S. population does not have $600 to its name. And for Joe Biden to go up in an interview and say that his great accomplishment is expanding NATO, I mean, I think all of us look around and say, you know, which planet is this person living on? It's just an absolute and total absurdity.
Well, you know, Alexander, explain to us why NATO won't negotiate an end to this conflict in Ukraine. By my account, Russia has proposed five different times. And as Aaron pointed out in the Istanbul process and weeks after the conflict started in February of 2022, there was a thick document that had been essentially initialed. Why can't NATO negotiate an end to this? Because when this comes to an end, NATO's going to look very bad, and maybe its very existence will be at stake. It has a choice. Go ahead.
Well, I honestly believe that NATO still hopes that there's a light in the end of the tunnel that will allow them to exit this
conflict.
Well,
Alexander, you know, I like the metaphor, the light at the end of the tunnel, but you know what that light at the end of the tunnel is? A train coming at you. Keep going.
Exactly. That, and that's pretty much what will happen in the end, because they have the expectation that they will be saved and that they will be able to get out of this conflict in a clean way, without at least the need to face their own voters and say, well, we had to go out of this, we had to achieve an agreement, but at least this was the best solution for everyone. Because presently, there's no best solution for NATO. There's no good solution. NATO simply is continuing and trying to use Ukraine as a weapon against Russia. And until the moment that they will not be able to continue to do so, on that moment, NATO won't have any kind of excuse to continue on fighting for this conflict. Like you said, there were at least five attempts made by Russia to reach a peace deal. The first one, it was not because the Ukrainians didn't want to. It was because the Ukrainians were forced to by the West. We have to say this many, many other times. And I truly believe that even after this first attempt, there were several others. I don't believe that Ukrainians are pretty comfortable on continue fighting against Russia and every day listening to the news and watching and reading at the same time that another village, another place has fallen, and at the same time, dozens or hundreds of Ukrainian military personnel has died. I don't believe that they actually accept that to continue fighting is a solution.
Well,
but
Aaron, if you're in the Zelensky gang, I don't know how they cut up the spoils here, but I mean, it's an amazing grift. I mean, they'll keep it going as long as they possibly can. I'm sure they've got planes on the tarmac to fly them to Miami or Tel Aviv, okay, or wherever they're going to go. I mean, this is, at the end of the day, that's a grift. And we have people like Hunter Biden that, you know, was the spear of it all. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out, the end game here with these people, because it's going to become clear to the Ukrainians, if it's not already, that they have been robbed and sold down the river by these people. I think that the carrot and the stick for Zelensky is that he can, you know, steal and embezzle, you know, millions and millions of dollars from the money that the U.S. gives Ukraine. But he also faces death potentially if he tries to reverse course. I think that the Nazis are there.
By his own people.
Yeah, he has a Nazi contingency that believes that this is some sort of eschatological conflict for them in an insane, you know, Aryan backwater way. I don't even understand this.
Well,
this
at the end of the day, a lot of people are going to leave and they're going to be counting their money, and no one will be held accountable for this catastrophe that never should have happened. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Lisbon, Philadelphia, and in San Francisco. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.